But I think what we wanted to do is really just make this a collective Dharma talk. Like, those are just some of our thoughts and really what's fresh for us, what we're talking about in our time together, how we're practicing, what we're thinking about. And let's make this a collective project. So how else can we grow the Dharma talk and or the Dharma conversation? And yeah, so Craig has this idea. It's a little bit different maybe than what was on your original schedule, but he actually taught with Rhonda McGee this day long. And so this is really a structure from Rhonda. It's called the Fishbowl. You want to explain more?
Sure. Yeah. So Rhonda, if you don't know about Rhonda McGee yet, you should get to know her. She's really, I mean, her book is excellent. So you can buy her book. And her book is, of course, an expression of who she is. But even better is being in person with her. If you can ever do a retreat with her online or in person, she embodies very beautifully all of the qualities that we've been pointing to. Like when I was teaching with her, she did all these out of the box, wonderful exercises. Like she had us hum and rock just to get into the body. And another exercise that she did was this fishbowl. So this is a group process that you might be familiar with. Some of us have done it in person, but she actually did it on Zoom, and I'd never seen that before. The fishbowl is like two circles. So there's a small circle. Those are the people in the middle. And maybe there's three people in the small circle. And then there's an outer circle, which is all the rest of us. And so the dialogue begins with the three people in the small circle, each having a turn to speak. You know, they speak to the prompt, you know, from their own experience, from their body, and the rest of us hold them in a kind of metta, loving kindness, a field of awareness. And when one person has finished speaking, and then maybe they have 2 or 3 minutes, then they kind of pass the talking stick to the next person in the inner circle. And the next person has 2 or 3 minutes where they really have an opportunity to explore their own experience while the rest of us hold space for them. And then the third person. And then from there, it opens to the wider circle for just a wider group discussion. I think it creates a kind of container for internal and external exploration, a kind of dialogue. So I thought it might be nice to do the fishbowl now. And I'll tell you the prompt in just a moment. But could we have 3 volunteers who are willing to be in the inner circle to begin? Iris is willing. Got 1. Steve is willing. We've got 2.
I'm willing.
And Suze is willing. We've got 3. Okay. And if you have the opportunity to come onto video for this part, that's very helpful. I understand sometimes it's not possible. Some of us might be driving or walking down the street, and that's also welcome. But if you can come onto video, that this is a nice moment just to be present. And this is almost like a meditation period, you know, so we're really bringing our full attention to the one person who is speaking. And we're going to go in order of who volunteered first. So it's going to be Iris, then Iris will pass the walking stick virtually to Steve, and then Steve will pass the talking stick virtually to Suze. And I'll give you the prompt, and this is really for everyone, not just for the people in the inside circle. And then we'll sit for a moment just to kind of settle into our bodies. And then I will pass the walking stick, the talking stick. I'll pass the talking stick to Iris. So the question really is, what's alive for you now? Another way of saying that might be something like, what's been coming up for you today? And this can be physical sensations. This can be heart sensations, emotions. This can be thoughts, insights. Just whatever the range of your experience is, what's alive for you now? So let's sit for a moment together, just maybe 60 to 90 seconds. We'll sit here. You could close your eyes, settle in. Feel your body. You might just ask yourself, what's alive for me now? And don't try to come up with an answer, but just feel as that question drops into your heart center, into your somatic space, feel what's here. Maybe know any emotions that might be active or activated, and any thoughts. Okay, you can open your eyes, and I'm going to pass the talking stick to Iris. And so the rest of us are just going to hold Iris with metta, with kindness, and with a kind of presence.
Well, actually, right now, some anxiety and not really about speaking, but about my need to speak and the both wanting to be seen and wanting to hold space for others. And so that short gap of who wants to be in the inner circle, I saw my wanting and I saw my, you know, be quiet, Iris, let others. And then there was just a little bit of anxiety, like, you know, like, as you can tell, I volunteer first often. And so I'm just trying to hold with kindness and compassion for myself, because, you know, part of me wants to beat myself up a bit for not being quieter and letting others have the space. And especially since the three of us who did volunteer are all Ulsters, and, you know, the other thing that's coming up is really loving the kind of conversation you and Devin are having with us, and the appreciation for just sort of living the Dharma, you know, living the Dharma in our upside down world. That's my interest. Passing the stick to Steve.
I don't know why we can't hear you. You're unmuted, but might have to do with your, no, still not, microphone or something. Oh. No, it's so strange. I was working earlier today. Oh, yes.
There you go.
Now you're on.
I'm just using the, I took off, I'm unheadphoned.
Okay.
Anyway, I want to thank Iris for what she said about, I almost felt like I should hold back, but then, oh well. I think I just feel, this has been like a really happy, a happy day. And I think I feel just sort of inspired by the ultimate flexibility of the Dharma. It's not a bunch of ancient rules, but it's what works. And I just really appreciate the way Craig and Devin have been bringing that forward in their own flexibility. Kind of resonates with a part of me. So I feel, you know, because sometimes I felt sort of not stuck exactly, but sometimes frustrated, like I should be moving faster or things like that. And it just reminds me how, you know, the, what they say in Tibetan tradition, there's 84,000 different ways the Buddha taught, which means sort of like there's many ways to fit us. We just have to keep our heart on the compass and see that where we're moving, and we sort of start to innately know that, just like the experience that Greg shared about the river. I had one similar about Long Island Sound. I'll tell with him someday. So it's just been like a wonderful rejoicing in the freedom and possibilities. And hopefully we can all kind of in our own individual ways kind of bring that forward. Thank you.
We'll pass the stick to Suze.
So in my walking period after our nap, I think it was something that Devin said about being soft and tender. And so I was walking, feeling soft and tender, and then a very old bifurcation of, if I'm soft and tender, then it's scary. And where's the, how do you stay soft and tender and right here and be present and show up, not only show up for my life, but show up for the life that we're all living and what we're being called to do, and where's safety, where's the refuge, all of those kinds of questions is what came up. And they're not new. I've been, ever since my partner died a couple years ago, it's been really up for me of where's safety, where's refuge, what's needed. And I love Devin's use of the both and, because I've had that kind of experience in the midst of a lot of pain. There can be just such beauty and everything's fine and it's awful at the same time. There's really is the, I've experienced that both and I've experienced the vulnerability and the strength at the same time. But anyway, I'm surprised that it came up again, because I've been feeling so great today. It's just been a lovely day. And then there it came, you know. Once again, the mind is going to bring up what the mind's going to bring up, and the body. And so even right this moment, I feel that tenderness and the the looking to my heroes and heroines for how, in the midst of all the craziness they lived with, whatever the content was, persevering, resilience, inspiration, courage, determination, sincerity. That's what I feel open to the heroes and heroines sharing all of that with me.
Thank you. Yeah, so let's all just take a minute. You could close your eyes if you want, or leave your eyes open, look around the room, but just kind of let this settle in for you, what Iris and Steve and Suze have said. See how it resonates for you, knocks around for you, doesn't resonate for you, the full experience. And then what's alive for you now? What's alive for you now? What's been alive for you today? Giving yourself room to really metabolize what has been in the body, heart, and mind today. And so as you can open your eyes, and as we move into the outer circle now, we can imagine sort of that Suze and Steve and Iris join the outer circle, and we're all in a big circle. But we're maintaining this sense of presence for each other, this warm awareness, this metta attention. And maybe we could hear from a couple of more people, in particular some of the younger people or the people who are not as central to Sims, which is not a critique of anyone who has spoken so far. It's an invitation. Yeah.
Hi, this is Khaled again. Thanks again for the teachings. I think for me, I realize I live 90%, neck and above, not even thinking that much, but just, I think it's just my default. So remembering to go back to the body and trying to practice that. If I don't, even for meditation, things like following the breath, I don't do it in the chest, so it's still in my face. So it's still, even though it's a body thing, it's still in your head, so trying to remember, I can actually follow my breath in my chest maybe, or do something mm-hmm. else. So I feel a little bit imbalanced that way. So it's just nice to be reminded of that. And and from your experience too, I like that. It sounds like you've tried, you've done Tibetan and Vipassana and different styles. And so for me too, I feel like I'm pretty open to, anything that works or is helpful, I'm happy to try it. So it's just nice to get that perspective. And not feel like you need to be, just from the outside, I'm not sure how much, lineage and things. It's a little bit, I enjoy martial arts, and sometimes there can be little schools of like, if you look at a kung fu movie, there's like the water school, the fire, or whatever it is. And it's like, you shouldn't learn the water technique because you're, and I just feel like that's, people's personal egos and things getting in the way. So it's just nice to remember that we're just trying to understand our minds and hearts better, and not getting tied into one necessarily is nice.
Yeah, thank you, Khaled. Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, Dory.
I'm one of those newer folks, both to meditation and to Sims. And I appreciate what Iris said. I it does make me really nervous to speak in groups. So mm-hmm. I tend to be on the shyer side. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because I don't feel like I have anything that insightful to say. Mm-hmm. but I just feel like I'm soaking it all in still. And so many of the things that you mentioned today, both Craig and Devin, around kind of, you know, when you do have to take this practice with you in the milieu of life, and how, for me, I guess one of the things that I'm really trying to work on is how do I do that? You know, I've done a lot of these weekend retreats since I started meditating, which was only back in April. But taking it through, you know, and it, I do get to a really kind of a place of deep connection, which is really an incredible experience for me as somebody who struggles with loneliness. Bringing that then into the week is something that I want to keep working on. And throughout today, I've been thinking about how can I lead meetings in a more way. I lead a lot of meetings at work. And it's, I've got all these ideas I've been writing down about, you know, leading meetings more mindfully, like, why can't this permeate business culture and, you know, and different facets of culture, because I think everyone could really benefit even from just a minute or two to be present to what we're working on that hour. So those are some thoughts. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Sue.
Yeah, there, I'm unmuted, I guess. I don't qualify for being one of the younger folks, but I probably am also one that isn't the first to jump in. I don't have Iris's issue. I definitely had many moments of contentment today and really appreciated a lot of some of the exercises, the heroes, which brings tears to my eyes, and even the fakey heroes of movies bring tears to my eye, but I'm thinking about my true heroes. But I think one of the things that was really, I appreciated the message about, beyond mindfulness, the moral and ethical, the, you know, basically the call to action. And I'd say in the moment, I certainly, I think I have a bit of trepidation about, and I think as Devin said, stepping outside of that zone and really sort of answering that call. And I have, you know, it was kind of the other side of it, of the mind always wanting more, wanting to do more, wanting to become more. Two different things. Maybe I'm struggling with opposite sides, but I know I have done some things. I did march in a silent march with the Black Lives Matter and some about the vote letter writing and things like that. But you know, I feel like I could really, you know, I do beat on myself for not doing enough. And yeah, it's really kind of finding what my path is and where I need to be in terms of both answering that call and finding my moral compass and what I need to do. Beating on myself, being okay with where I am in the moment, I think.
Yeah. Thank you. Maybe one or two more.
Yeah, Laurel.
Hi. I think to answer the question, I'm feeling a lot of relief right now. I've gone through a few weeks of really tumultuous times, of things that were out of my control, but affecting me greatly. And I was able to, I let my practice slip a little bit through it all, and I knew I needed it. And I woke up this morning and I remembered that this was happening. This is exactly what I need today to rebalance and center. And what I wanted to do was to let go of all of that. And while I was doing the walking meditation, I really felt I was able to whenever those thoughts came or the memories, I could really feel it in my feet and just bring myself back to my body and let everything go. And then I pictured everything that had just happened over the last, it was months long of this. It was a big thundercloud, and I could just picture it kind of raining itself out and going off into the distance of the horizon, and just to hear from other people and remember other people are out there and we all are struggling and we're here trying to find the right path. I couldn't have asked for a better thing today. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So maybe one more in this exercise and then we'll transition more into normal people talk.
Say something. I'm one of the younger ones, obviously. I also have been part of Sims for a number of years, but I don't always participate in the conversation. So yeah, I kind of had to dare myself to do it just now. But I really resonated with what Sue said and Laurel, and just referencing that both and that really struck a chord with me. And I like what you said, Suze, about the experience of, you know, you being able to experience incredible beauty even in the midst of terrible pain, and that I've also experienced that in the last few months with the difficult life situation I'm going through. And it's just kind of interesting to see how it feels like a surprise to the mind. It's like, oh, how is that possible? And yet I'm experiencing joy at this moment, but I should not be joyful because I'm also really sad. But you experience the reality of it. And I've been thinking a lot about the concept of forgiveness and struggling with believing I need to eventually forgive someone for something, but feeling like I'm really not there yet. And just now listening to the whole discussion, like, it just clicked. And it felt like the both and is very, very important for forgiveness, to be able to hold both sides of, you know, maybe being kind to someone or seeing the best in them, and yet not needing to deny that harm was caused or that the relationship needs to change. So anyway, thank you. You spoke to me.
Thank you. Yeah, so maybe let's take a moment again. I guess Devin and I are really into taking a moment. But yeah, you could like close your eyes for a moment, feel how it is now in your body. As we let the fishbowl come to a close. And let's take just a stand-up break. So you can just stand up just for 30 to 60 seconds.
Okay, I probably should have left myself muted for that. Excuse me. Welcome back. So we just wanted to leave some time here. We have about 15 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes even, for what's unresolved, or do you have any questions? This could just, you know, this can be questions that Devin and I might weigh in on, explore together, have some dialogue around. It could also just be like open questions that are hanging out for you. But yeah, does anyone have any questions? I'm gonna let Devin Moore take the lead on this one.
Yeah, I just, while you're thinking about what you might ask, I just wanted to name, like, that exercise for me highlights again our vulnerability, you know, sort of feeling my nervous system respond to each of you sharing in such authentic ways. So wanting to just name that and bow to your courage, and also the sense of, you know, these social, these systems that resonate, that connect, that respond, responsiveness as a quality of the heart. Joseph Goldstein frames this as our innate compassion. So just feeling that in your own heart, right? That it's vulnerable to come out of silence, that it's vulnerable, especially on Zoom, I would say, to share. And so just really acknowledging and honoring that we're here together, speaking, listening, holding that vulnerability together. Yeah. Yeah, so these could be questions. These could be also just like check-ins, what's up for you? Or comments on what we shared, disagreements even, could be anything. Yeah, Matt.
Hey, you had mentioned that you're mentoring some folks for teacher training with, I think, Jack Kornfeld and Matt Harbrock. I had seen that teacher training online, and it struck me as kind of like not part of lineage. So I saw it and thought, well, I pay $8,000 and I check in once a week, and then after 2 years I'm a teacher? What? Can you talk a little bit more about that program and what it's trying to accomplish in context of keeping the Dharma going in the West?
Yeah, totally. I love that you're asking this question. It's a juicy one. I had the same reaction. Like, what? You know, a lot of us have practiced for decades and we're still not teachers. And yet here's somebody who's just done, what, 2 years of at-home practice. I think the prerequisites for that program are 2 years of home practice and 1 week-long retreat. Not very much. So yeah, I think a lot of us hold that skepticism. So to be honest, I've been mentoring for a year and a half for them. And in some ways, it's a little bit like we've been talking about the both and. That yes, what you're naming and pointing to, I think, is in some ways problematic because they're not naming a lineage. And it's training folks who are in all kinds of different situations in the world, mostly secular. Some people who have long Dharma practice, but a lot of folks who don't, who are psychotherapists or nurses or teachers who just want to bring these practices into their work environment. And that has both and. Like, there's a beauty to that. It's 1,300 people getting certified all over the world. So that's amazing. People in South Africa and in the Faroe Islands and in remote places in Australia who would never have had access to mindfulness are now getting trained so that they can really steep in at least 2 years of practice. At its best, I think this program is like 2 years of intensive meditation training. So that part I think is really good, and it's diverse. And then you have all the pitfalls like you're naming. I think Jack and Tara are incredibly charismatic and dynamic leaders, and I wish that they would name lineage more. Even if they're weaving lots of different styles and positive psychotherapy with early Buddhist teachings with Zen, Like, that's okay. You can see we do that too. But I think it's important to sort of clarify and name where things are coming from. And they don't do that as much as I would prefer them to do that. But I also think they're incredible innovators. You know, like, if they weren't doing this teacher training, somebody else would be. There's such a demand for mindfulness. And there's actually a real need for it, I would say. And they have so many years of practice training teachers that the content, I would say, is actually really quality content. And that these folks, even if they're newer practitioners, are getting a really good solid grounding in what meditation is, what is mindfulness. And because they're not training to be Dharma teachers, they're not going to teach long retreats. They're not, it's really sort of a specific kind of offering classes, 4 to 6 weeks in a lot of secular environments. I feel like they're getting the tools that they need to do that. And with all this contact they have with us individual mentors, there's about 50 of us mentors who have all gone through mostly like Spirit Rock or IMS teacher training. So through their conversations with us, they're getting those difficult questions, you know, like the lineage question, the question about trauma-informed mindfulness, the question about ethics and how to offer this in a safe way. So I think as a mentor, it's been an interesting kind of in-between place where I can be also open about my criticism of the program and think, yeah, it could be better for sure. And also, like, this is great. There's small groups of six that have been together now for 2 years and they're Sangha. You know, these six people groups are really bonded all around the world and they're using each other, especially through COVID, you know, to connect and share. I would say about half of my mentees have entered with some enthusiasm and a lot of ambition to teach. And now after going through a year and a half, almost 18 months, they're less confident, right? They're seeing more of what it really means to step into the teacher seat. And that's, I think, a win, you know? Like, the more sort of humble we get, the more wise we get about all the ways that that lineage continues. So yeah, it's a both and question. I'm noticing, like, I'm also in that liminal zone of like, can't fully endorse it, and yet also pretty enthusiastic about what is brought into my life and the kind of community that it's building. So I would say maybe not a perfectly satisfactory answer, but I really appreciate the question. And let's keep going. Let's see what happens with Dharma in the West. You know, it's really sort of a new experimental edge that we're all on. Yeah.
No, that was very helpful. I think I had reacted to it and said, oh, that's not how I've done practice, and therefore, you know, all sorts of judgments around it. So the both and is really helpful lens. Thank you.
You're welcome. I guess the last thing I'll say that feels really important to me is being involved in that program and also the Community Dharma Leaders program out of Spirit Rock, that for a lot of us who are involved in creating these programs, a huge motivating factor is wanting to empower and certify a diversity of voices. And so there's a whole collection of new teachers of color that are coming out and with empowered voices. And that to me feels like a really important thing. So that's a big win, I'd say, for that. Yeah. Yeah. Other thoughts, questions?
I think I saw Khaled's hand up.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, sort of related to that a little bit, but could, I guess, either of you speak to the balance of effort and effortlessness in practice? So I sort of have, and it might be a both and, but it seems like you're not supposed to strive, you know, you're supposed to let things happen. But then I think Buddha's last words were like, yeah, work hard for mindfulness or for your...
Work hard for mindfulness.
Yeah, so it's like, okay.
I love that translation.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, the last thing you need to know is work really hard. It's like, oh no. So that goes through my head a little bit between how to balance those two.
Maybe I'll just start it and then hand it over to Devin. Can I ask a quick question before I start? What style or styles have you practiced in?
Oh, me? Mm-hmm. Mostly Vipassana, and then I guess probably I've been meditating probably 2 or 3 years, like, more seriously. So mm-hmm. Most of that has been Vipassana, then a little bit of like Tibetan, like open awareness, like Anam Tibetan.
Tibetan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I have, and then, yeah, so I'd say maybe 70% Vipassana and 30% other.
All right, and 30, the 70% Vipassana is then the kind of like IMS Sims style Vipassana or the Goenka style Vipassana?
Sims style, yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Yeah, I think the first thing that I would say, maybe this is the answer to every question. There's no simple answer. In fact, there is a range of answers. And you will get different answers from different traditions. And not only will you get different answers from different traditions, but you will get different answers at different stages of the tradition. So for example, in let's say Kagyu tradition, which is one school of so-called Tibetan Buddhism, Vajrayana, they'll start you off with a lot of effort. You know, like physical and attentional effort. They'll start you off doing 100,000 prostrations. And there's a reason for that. You know, reason is that we tend to be wild-minded. We tend to throw our effort around a lot. And also it's designed for 16-year-old boys. So there's like this, throw a whole bunch of effort in, and over time it will start to regulate. You know, attention will start to regulate, effort will start to regulate, and then as you move through those practices in that one particular tradition, it becomes more and more refined. And then you maybe I'll stay in this Tibetan lens for a moment. But then you also have people like Anam Tupten, who is like he's one of my favorites. I love him very much. But what he does is he has looked at the cultural landscape from the lens of his own traditional training. And he's basically said, wow, these folks, not only in the West, really all over the world now, who are living in urbanized, over information cultures. These folks are tight, 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 tight in the mind. And so what he's saying is, the first thing we need to do is just loosen up a little bit. And so what he does is he starts out at the top of the most refined part of the tradition. Okay, that's just background, right? That's just like different people do it differently depending on the time and the place and the tradition and all of that. The way that Devin and I tend to think about this is what works for you? And what works for you this week? Because you are developing, you know, as you meditate, and as you begin to stabilize your attention and regulate your attention and also kind of acclimate to the practice, you will have different needs at different phases in your own practice. And we tend to trust mentees and students to knock around in their own experience and find out how much effort is necessary at any given time. And we tend to say sometimes you actually need a heroic effort, like what the Buddha talked about on his deathbed. And sometimes you really need a kind of laid back, open awareness. And you can practice a whole continuum of effort depending on what moment you're in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, I would totally echo all of that. And there's so many wonderful metaphors to demonstrate, you know, like the tuning of the lute to make sure the strings are exactly right. I think about last year, we lived for a year in Hawaii. You can see Craig is wearing his aloha shirt. That's my favorite shirt. I told him to wear the flowers today. But when we were in Hawaii, I was so lucky I got to participate on the paddling team. So we were in these outrigger canoes, really beautiful traditional Tahitian canoes, and in teams of six, we would paddle. And I learned, just like any other sport, like running or tennis, any of it, you have this sense of putting out effort, but in a sustained way. Like if you're in a race, you know you have to make it to the end. And so in paddling, just like in meditation, there was this sense of applied effort, but in an easeful way. You know, it's like all, and I'm sure those of you who are musicians know that in terms of practicing over the long term, or athletes, or man, we just saw this amazing piece, clip, we'll send it to you afterwards, of all these tap dancers. It's called the Northwest Tap Company. And woo, so powerful, the dancing they were doing, you know, and the sense of like heroic effort, but also just so much ease and grace in the middle of that. You know, sometimes our friend Alexis Santos, he likes to talk about how in some countries, kids like to play with tires, you know, kind of roll the wheel, and usually have like a stick or something to tap the tire to keep it rolling. And it doesn't take that much effort, you know, it's like a really gentle tap to keep the tire rolling. When we have momentum, like we do now after a day of practice, it's less effort. It's in the beginning, maybe it takes more to kind of get it going. But once you have the continuity, then it can be lighter and lighter, like Craig is saying. So if the metaphors help, you can sort of think about that for yourself. It's also an embodied learning. So all this emphasis on the body. I've learned right effort through yoga. I continue to learn right effort through yoga. You know, when I was young, I would do all this vinyasa and ashtanga practice. And now I want to do it my whole life. So I'm more like Iyengar, slower forms of yoga. So I think, again, anytime, any given moment, pay attention. How do you know you're on track, right? Feel the body. Feel that sense of both like fire and grace that can help us sort of tap into what our unique balance is. And we go on and off. Right? That's also the whole practice. It's like the pendulum swinging from one direction to the other. So knowing that it's one continuous mistake also. Yeah.
One continuous mistake is a quote from Suzuki Roshi, by the way. That's a Zen thing.
Here we are, mixing our lineages.
But it is good. I think it lightens us up to recognize that it's a continual process, like Devin was saying. But yeah, any other questions?
Yeah, Valerie.
In my practice, I try to work with the arising and passing phenomenon. So I try to, at least I read Ingram's book sometimes, but also just kind of seeing the rising and passing of emotions, rising and passing of breath and thought and sounds. Sounds are a little bit easier because it's louder. So I guess the question is, what is your method for working with arising and passing? I think that helps me understand impermanence a little bit better in a non-duality sense, because I'm working with that, I guess, one of the three characteristics to help really, I guess, understand the emotional side of humanity, especially for me. I can get frustrated sometimes, so I kind of want to see the beginning and the ending of that too. Mm-hmm. So I guess the question is, what is your method for seeing the rising and passing?
Yeah, we might answer this differently. I love Daniel Ingram's writings. Referencing, like, I think he wrote his book is called Mastering the Buddhist Teachings. He's a little out there. He's one of those, you know, teachers that a little bit like maybe Jack and Tara's program, like, ooh. But I love his writing. I love his teaching. So arising and passing, really core principle to that insight into the characteristic of impermanence. Again, this is one I think is both, and like we can put forth heroic effort to see it, and it's a kind of grace when it comes. So for me, like, sometimes I see that kind of momentary passing and it's very clear that impermanence is all there is. And other times I'm a little bit more stuck in the seeming solidity of the world and myself. So there's a kind of allowing that insight to arise and pass also, right? So Craig might say more, and there's lots of ways, you know, just building samadhi, just kind of setting your compass towards seeing impermanence. That's all often enough that we, enough, you know, you can sort of like make that aspiration as you sit down, may I see arising and passing, and then let the practice unfold naturally. For me, one really lovely way is to actually do death contemplation. And that emphasizes the passing, but it sort of, we start to see arising and passing when we start to see the endings of things. So feeling the end of each breath and actually contemplating like this breath actually is, could be my last, or at least it's one breath closer to my own passing. That really makes things very bright and clear for me. Just that contemplation on the out breath. Also at night, I talked a little bit about sleep practice, but this can be once a big ending of the day, right? Big transition. So sort of contemplating my own death as I go to sleep. You know, there's one less day in my life. And can I prepare my mind to make this kind of transition from wake to being asleep, waking to sleeping? So we kind of look out for all those bigger transitions and smaller transitions throughout the day. In the Vajrayana, we call these bardos, or intermediate states, where you're really noticing the ending and the arising. And those happen in bigger ways and smaller ways. And you can, again, in the first beginning of your day, set your intention to see that all the way through. Subtle ways when you're sitting, doing sitting practice, bigger ways when you're driving and working and doing your day. So that can be, it's more intentional ways to kind of tune the attention towards all the different levels of impermanence that we're living through. Yeah. Seifan, you got more?
I find that I want to ask a bunch of really personal questions, and this probably is not the moment for that. If you ever want to do a mentoring session, this is a really good topic for a mentoring session, because my approach with these kinds of specific questions tends to be about refining samadhi. So like Devin was saying, if you refine your samadhi in you know, the gathered mind, the sense that the rippling waves of consciousness begin to flatten out a little bit, then insight into arising and passing happens almost on its own. And if samadhi isn't refined, it can be quite difficult to access it on an experiential level. So I want to be like, I want to get into lots of details with you, but I don't think we're going to do it at the moment. But it could be something for you also to just think about for yourself. Like, is there a way, both through formal and informal touching in throughout the day to refine my samadhi so that this insight, especially into passing, I think that's the most important one to me, kind of refine the consciousness so that I see the tapering off of each thought, tapering off of each feeling, tapering off of each perception. Yeah, so that's something that comes to mind. Yeah. Well, I mean, the schedule says that we're wrapping up now, but does anyone have one last question that feels like important, or it feels like, oh gosh, if I didn't get to ask this, it would be so sad. Okay. Good. Good.
I have a question. This is very logistical, but I wonder if you guys want to stay in touch with us, or we often at the end of these retreats send out like a follow-up email with some resources, some guided meditations. I want to share this tap dance video we just watched with you. It's amazing, but we don't have your emails. So if you're interested, you could just put your email into the chat and we'll make sure we save it and then make a group for you guys, so then we have a way to stay in touch also. That's awesome. Thank you. Excellent. Great. And some of you might already be on our list. So if you already get our emails, it's all good. But actually, you could still put your email in here because we'll make one especially for you so we can send out a follow-up.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe we'll just do a final check-in. You don't have to close your eyes or do anything special, but just kind of get a sense for how you're doing now. And we'll do what's called a lightning round, which is just chat box, one word to one sentence. How is it for you now? Got easeful, energized, awake. Good, I want more. Energized and peaceful, peaceful, peaceful and alive. Calm and satisfied. Content, peaceful, grateful. New doors open for weathered yogi. That's like a haiku. Lighter, happy, want the discussion to continue. And grateful. Great. Okay. Oh, wonderful. Well, it's been a real pleasure to be here with all of you.
I'd like to say a word of thanks, if I might, before.
Sure, go for it.
Do it now. Okay.
Why not?
Yeah. So, can you hear me? I guess you can't hear me. You know, speaking for everybody here in some funny way, I'd like to just thank Devin and Craig for bringing the Dharma so beautifully. And I was thinking it was kind of like friends encouraging friends, you know, instead of some kind of big, heavy Dharma download. It was friends encouraging friends, which is really lovely. And also simultaneously freehand but drenched in tradition. In a really lovely, spacious way. So just, you know, I feel like you've been really reaching out to everybody here and really trying to contact everyone here. And thanks to both of you. And also just my Donna hat on, just to remind you to express your generosity through Donna. I'm setting the standard, I already did. So don't let the trail become cold. And onwards. So thank you so much.
Aw, thanks, Suze. Aw, sweet. Yeah, I was going to offer this metaphor. When Craig and I first met, he was a monk in the monastery, and we would practice early in the morning up in the high mountains of Colorado, and we would come out just as the sun was rising on the snow mountains, and he used this metaphor that the whole world is touching you. You know, that sense of like the plexiglass is gone and here we are touching the world. So that's sort of my aspiration, is like, let's go out into the world feeling that sense of connection, just loving everybody regardless, just loving them anyway, loving yourself, that sense of really deep, deep connection, and continuing the Dharma conversation, because it does just keep going. Mm-hmm. So we really hope to do this again with you. And we can just think that all of our good practice, our good awakened hearts, may this good energy just ripple out so it's shared with the world. So every single living, breathing being, may they benefit from all of our efforts here. Yahoo! Thank you. So good. Really just a blessing to be with you guys. Yeah.
Raise the roof.
Raise the roof. Have a really wonderful rest of your weekend. We also love to be in touch. So reach out anytime. We do a lot of mentoring. Yeah. Be well, you guys. Okay. Take care. Bye.
Bye.